Hey, time to move. Wasting daylight.
Ryan opened his eye and stared up through the canopy of branches overhead. Dawn streaked the sky, threading it with orange and gold that slashed through the retreating purple. He nodded, then shifted gently to extricate himself from the arm and leg Christy had draped over him in the night. She hadn't slept well, and he was surprised to find her asleep now. Cold fear touched him briefly, when he thought her slumber might be something else. He placed his fingers against the side of her neck, and relaxed when he felt the thumping of her carotid artery. He shook her slightly, watching her sentient hair pull back tightly against her scalp. As her eyelids flickered, he slid the Sig Sauer from under his thigh and holstered it. He'd kept it in his hand the whole night, against the possibility that Christy might have lost herself in her slumber. He wouldn't have killed her, but the old woman trying to take over her mind might not have known that. Christy's eyelids cracked open reluctantly, exposing the bloodshot lines threading through them.
Oh. Morning, lover.
Get much sleep?
She forced herself to her feet with effort and helped him gather the bedding they'd shared during the night.
Some. I don't know. I'm sorry. I know I kept you up.
That was the truth in more ways than one. After the oral lovemaking and he'd finished his turn at watch, she'd taken him to bed and had sex with him twice more. Ryan sensed she hadn't gotten much pleasure from the encounters herself. But she'd been driven, giving her all each time with a fierce abandon that had exhausted them both.
Sore?
Feels like I spent the night in a rough-riding wag with busted shocks.
She smiled, pleased with his answer. Some of the haunted look left her eyes for a moment.
Makes me feel good to hear you say that, lover. Been a while since we've had something like that.
Made things better for you?
Gave me a little more control. Florin doesn't care much for the sex. She's never had it.
I guess you can't say that now.
Ryan reached out and touched her face.
I swear, it's going to be okay.
I know.
The rest of the camp came alive slowly. Breakfast was a repeat of the previous night's meal, gone cold. The only thing heated up was the coffee sub they had, and that was because the pot had been kept going all night to fuel whoever had been on watch. Ryan joined JB and Mildred at the water's edge. The armorer cleaned his glasses with his shirt tail and looked at the murky brown water roiling with moss. Piranha glided easily through the water, schooling in lethal pools.
Going to be bastard tricky getting back into the boat without getting leeches all over us.
Then there's the piranha.
Guess they took to the feeding Doc dished out last night and decided to stay on.
Glancing around the campsite, Ryan spotted Jack, packing the gear they'd brought out from Junie.
Keep some of that rope out, Jack. We're gonna need it.
Planning on climbing over?
We get a line across, we can do it.
Won't be easy with the children we've got tagging along, and we can't leave them here. These people were barely making it along whatever path they were taking. We abandoned them here, we might as well bury them.
I'm not gonna cut them loose here. We'll see them off someplace safer, if we find one in these woods, and then get clear.
Jack and Ryan both stood in the big tree they'd chosen to rig up the ropes. They tied one end to a large branch above Jack, out as far as they could reach.
You miss. You're more than likely going to be fish shit by nightfall.
Grabbing the other end of the rope, Jack scampered back into the tree, choosing a branch that would give him enough of an arc to hopefully reach the boat. He stood on the branch barefoot, feeling the rough bark against the soles of his feet. Ryan concentrated on swinging the ponga, hacking small branches out of the way. Jack knew they'd already removed all the ones that mattered, but he also knew Ryan was concerned about him. Jack tested the rope in his hands, pulling it taut and checking the pull of the branch it was tied to. Without another word, he took two running steps forward along the branch, then hurled himself out from the tree. He kept the tension on the rope, transferring all his forward motion into a swing toward the moored boat. He checked the swing, letting his natural acrobat's ability guide him. The pull of gravity tugged at him, increasing his speed. In a heartbeat, he was out over the water. His forward motion slowed, and he knew he couldn't risk losing all of it. Releasing the rope, he spread his arms wide in an effort to keep his balance as he hurtled toward the boat's prow. He was higher than he'd anticipated, coming down faster than he'd wanted. At least he was coming down near the boat. He landed in the boat hard, tucking into a roll and coming up on his feet. A feeling of exhilaration filled him as he turned to face the others who were now watching him. He smiled, then started pulling the second rope attached to him across so they could rig the transfer. It took almost as long to get the passengers aboard the boat as it did to rig up the ropes. They'd lost much of the morning. Ryan stood back at the pilot house with Morse, watching Bud and Sandy race up and down the rigging like monkeys as the other passengers and the companions settled in. Junie slunk back into the river's current reluctantly, almost mired in the slow waters near the bank. Morse worked the wheel. Then the sails bailed out and caught the wind. Her prow sheared through a low sandbar that left Ryan wondering if she'd torn her bottom away.
Not to worry. Old Junie, she's a workhorse, not some nervous filly.
Where's the nearest place we can do some trading for ammo and gear?
Well, that'll be Annie's.
How far?
In a wind like this, if it stays with us, maybe half a day. Be there before nightfall, no matter what.
How's she fixed for supplies?
Annie's a trader. Come by it natural born. Anything worth having anywhere near, she'll have it if she wants it. Or she'll know where a fella can trade for it.
You're gonna need ammo.
She'll have it. She'll be willing to trade for blasters, so you can relax your brain about that. With the slaggers in Idaho Falls getting fatter and bigger, a lot more people are wanting to get their hands on some firepower. If your friend could get those blasters fixed, she'll be willing to trade with both of us.
Ryan accepted that. Trading was only one of the options the companions had, and he knew it. With the condition Christy was in, he wasn't going to be any more politic than he had to be. By noon, Ryan stood in the prow with Doc and Mildred, feeling the breeze whisper past him and the sun beat down on him. The air was tainted with the smell of salt and minerals burning, coming from the galley below where Morse's sons had started up the water purifying system they had on board. The water purification setup was cobbled together out of spare parts and copper tubing they'd scavenged, but Doc had pronounced it serviceable. Being able to filter water from the river made them dependent only on game from the riverbanks while they sailed. The previous night's haul would carry them for a few days.
Back when I was around the totality concept whitecoats, my dear Ryan, they were experimenting with many things that were supposed to enhance a person's psychic ability. Drugs, electrical experiments, even operations on the brain itself that involved transplantations from other brains and the insertion of microcomputers.
Anything like this?
Ryan looked at the nearby railing where Christy slept like the dead. Her body rolled slowly with the motion of the boat. Only the slow rise and fall of her breasts let him know she was still alive. Dean sat nearby, keeping watch over her. Doc shook his head, his long hair tangling in the breeze.
But I recollect. I made myself privy to as many of their goings-on as I could, but there was still much that I missed.
We're still days out from finding the Heimdall Foundation. After the problem she had last night, we need an edge to help her get past this.
Doc and I talked last night. We came up with a few possible solutions. First option is to keep her hopped up on drugs.
That'll mean carrying her with us. If you stay on the boat, that won't be much of a problem. Just one less blaster, which she almost is now. But once we leave, carrying her would be hard on the rest of us. The truth is, I'm having a hard time hacking the idea of Christy mind-numbed and not being able to take care of herself.
We could leave her somewhere and have one of us stay with her.
No. We're in hostile territory. Splitting up isn't something we're gonna do. What else you got?
Hypnosis is a possibility I would be willing to consider.
What are you planning on doing with hypnosis?
Perhaps I could help Christy build a wall against the old crone's personality. By whatever means she employed to connive her way into Christie's mind, she is only there because Christy has not found a way to get rid of her.
Why not just hypnotize the old woman? Have her chill herself inside Christie's head and leave Christy alone?
Treating her like a multiple personality sounds like an answer. But there's some problems with that.
Exactly. At the moment, Christy is the dominant personality of the two. He might upset that delicate balance by calling forth the harridan that is possessing her. Once we get her to the forefront, she might not be so easily returned.
What Doc wants to work on is breaking the communication between Christy and the old woman. Maybe if Christy had more time and was in a quiet place, she'd be able to do it on her own.
It's not going to happen now.
No, it is not.
There is one other option.
Go on.
We could perform an exorcism.
Madam, I cannot believe you would suggest such a thing. How can you even entertain the notion of ghosts and call yourself a person of science?
Everybody believes in ghosts, or at least they admit to the possibility.
I would in no wise agree to that blanket statement.
No, But I'll bet you bought into every ghost story old Shakespeare ever wrote.
I beg your pardon. The Bard included ghosts only as dramatic license, a plot device that kept a good story rolling along at a nice clip.
I'm not talking about ghosts. I'm talking about belief systems. Maybe that old woman only has a toehold in Christie's psyche because of her gifts and her belief in things supernatural. Maybe if we had an exorcism and Christie believed hard enough, she'd be able to build that wall against the old woman like Doc was talking about. If we give her a crutch to believe in, maybe her own belief systems will kick in and deny the woman's existence.
I don't know.
We're just trying to buy some time. Your call.
All right, I'm in. But when?
After nightfall. By then, maybe we'll be at this Trader Annie's place and off the river for the night.
And pray tell, dear lady, how many exorcisms have you hosted?
This'll be my first.
Shit. This isn't the time to be figuring out if maybe you can and maybe you can't.
I could have conducted 40 of them over the years. It doesn't mean it would work on Christie now. An exorcism doesn't require me believing in it. It requires her believing in it.
Right, right. You talk to her first?
Yeah. Get her thinking along the lines we need her to first. Then we'll do the exorcism tonight, when we have time to put on a show and do it right.
Only if she's got the strength. Even getting to the trading post, we're going to be on condition red. And don't trust Morse not to run us into a trap. Everybody keep your eyes peeled.